Wall Street dipped Wednesday as healthcare stocks tumbled for a second straight session. The Dow, S&P 500, and NASDAQ finished just below the break-even line. Investors grew concerned about potential changes to healthcare policy amid the presidential election season that dragged down shares of Merck, United Health, Pfizer, and Abbott Labs.
Social media company Pinterest, on the eve of its hotly anticipated IPO Thursday, priced its shares at $19 each, valuing the company above $12 billion. The share price sitting higher than the $15 to $17 range the company set just over a week ago, Pinterest, like Lyft and Uber, has yet to turn a profit.
A long-running clash over aircraft subsidies between the European Union and the U.S. could escalate into a broader trade spat. The EU on Wednesday threatened to slap tariffs on $20 billion worth of U.S. products on everything from planes to ketchup. The 11-page list also targets handbags and suitcases, frozen fish and video game consoles, among other things.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's April the 18th, 5:10 in the morning. And thank you for tuning in again for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We've put together a really good broadcast for you today. It's Thought Leader Thursday here in The Opening Bell. And Rod Murray is in the big chair today from Associated Bank. He's the Chicago Market President there. We'll be talking about some banking news and some news on the economy as well, economic growth and how the future is looking to local companies that are doing business with Associated Bank. That'll be in our first segment this morning, and Rod will join us momentarily. A little bit later on this morning at about 5:38, ageism in the workforce and starting your own business in the 60s because of it. Larry Chester will be here. He's the founder and president of CFO Simplified for a conversation about ageism in the workforce, again, starting at about 5:38 this morning. Of course, we'll also keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, traffic, and everything else going on this morning. Let's begin first on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning after stocks closed down slightly on Wall Street yesterday amid strong China data and corporate earnings. Were brought down by losses in the healthcare sector at the Dow. Closing, the Dow was down about 3 points. And this morning, as we look at the futures market, Dow futures are negative by nearly 0.25%. S&P and NASDAQ futures are off just a fraction as well. Around the globe this morning in London, markets are lower by 0.25%. In Germany, higher by 0.5%. In France, higher by 0.5%. And in Asia, markets all in the red. The Nikkei ending the day down 187 points, nearly 0.75%. The Hang Seng down 161 points, more than 0.5%. The Shanghai off nearly 0.5%. Oil in the U.S. at 63 a barrel, which is down about 13 cents. A couple of stories as we begin this morning, and you heard a little bit of it in the opening montage there. Pinterest pricing its initial public offering at $19 per share. The social media platform for bookmarking pictures from around the web announced the price late yesterday. The $19 figure is above Pinterest's proposed $15.17 IPO price range. Pinterest will start trading today on Wall Street. A pilot program in Stockton, California, will give some people an extra $500 a month with no strings attached. More than 100 pre-screened residents in the struggling town will receive the money as part of something called Guaranteed Basic Income. They're experimenting there in Stockton. It's being funded with private money. Researchers will use the 18-month trial to see if it improves lives. And Samsung is looking into reports that screens on its new foldable smartphones have been damaged after just short use. The Samsung Galaxy Fold has been given to some journalists for review, and there have been several reports that the screens have malfunctioned. Samsung said in a statement that it will thoroughly inspect those units to find out what caused the damage. The company also suggested that removing a protective layer on the handset's display could cause that same malfunction. The phone cost nearly $2,000 and will be released next week, so a lot of eyes watching this problem, apparent problem, with the Samsung foldable phones. Let's begin this morning with Thought Leader Thursday here on the opening bell. Rod Murray is with us. He's the Chicago Market President at Associated Bank. Rod, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. I'm going to
going to start our discussion this morning with some things in the news. The first is the Federal Reserve and interest rates. We had the Chicago Fed President Charles Evans recently talking about monetary policy, and pretty sure that interest rates are not going to be changed in the next year, he said, maybe until the fall of 2020.
Right. His indication is that things can remain unchanged into that time period, that the economy is stabilized enough that it's running on its own and that the Fed can take a neutral stance.
How will that work in terms of will that just kind of keep us at status quo? Or he also sort of couched his comments by saying if something happens with the data negatively, that there might be a need for an increase.
Right. So they'll probably manage more on what their comments say. So that'll give us an indication of what's to come. And they'll be reactionary if there's a major change. You know, so that could be anything from fallout from the trade, the China-U.S.-China trade deal or no deal. Could we see a big uptick in consumer debt? You know, that becomes any kind of an issue. So they'll be reactionary. But I think what we need to do is watch what their comments are at the different meetings coming out of it to kind of be predictive.
And one of the things we also watch is the inflation, the rate of inflation. I know the Fed wants to see 2% inflation. He's a little concerned that we haven't, you know, that's sort of been under control. What's the danger here moving forward as we look at these data points?
So, yeah, they did think that it was going to stabilize there, and then it's kind of bounced around a little bit. You know, 2% has always been the number, and it rose to that back in, you know, this time last year, actually. And I know he made his comments that he thought it would hold tight there, but it did bounce a little bit. It's the danger of it going significantly, you know, above or significantly below means that they have to maybe take some kind of a action on what either they're easing or they're tightening. You know, so that's the danger, is letting it get too far one way or the other, that they'll have to take something that either a step that they haven't taken or taken before.
Yeah, and even up into perhaps even cutting interest rates again.
Right. You know, and that's something that certainly you hear President Trump say that they should do. And they didn't say they aren't doing it, but right now we're saying we're just going to hold tight. And if President Trump's comments are that they shouldn't have increased as fast as they did, or certainly the last increase, the fourth increase that happened at the end of the year.
We've heard a lot about the independence of the Federal Reserve and the central bank. I know some of our neighbors in Europe and some other countries as well were talking about why it's important to leave these organizations alone. How important is it to have the central bank independent from politics?
Right. It's, you know, it's I am very important for some obvious reasons. It's a check and a balance. You know, so it goes back to the old adage of having some oversight, you know, because there have been comments, well, why don't they just do it if that's what, you know, President said, because he's the one that put Powell into place. However, they are two completely independent organizations, and you have to have a check and balance, and they're an independent organization making their own decisions.
Are these things people talk about in the banking industry, that these are concerns that they have, or what are you hearing when you keep your ear to the ground?
Yeah, so just on interest rates in general, you know, if you read 10 different things, you're going to get 5 answers one way and 5 the other, of course. But on the cautionary side, it's, well, that means that the economy is ticking on its own, so it looks strong. And some of the indicators of that are increased consumer debt spending, mainly on credit cards, and that levels out. Well, while that could signal a strong economy, somebody else could take the spin, but higher rate consumer debt, you know, getting too high, is it can be a pressure on the economy as well. So there's a tipping point on all of this. So the discussions are, what does it mean for the borrowing side of things, home ownership, home borrowing? And then on the other side, savers, right? They get the flip side of it, that, you know, it was going up, that's a little bit uptick, and they're the ones that get hurt if you're relying on basic savings as opposed to investing in equities, stock market, bonds, et cetera.
We're in the middle of earnings season, and the banks who've reported so far seem to be pretty strong.
They have, and you know, the headlines that you read a lot of are reflecting the strength in the economy, and some of the comments that come out of it, you know, state that. It's anytime earnings come out, you know, the obvious is it's kind of a looking back. So I pay more attention and what the looking forward is. And those rise in interest rates that we just talked about were a big component of that. You know, if you look at it holistically or globally, there are different soft spots in different banks. And there's been some cautionary comments from some of the banks on the net interest margin, which obviously ties the interest rates, are going to have a declining effect. So, but the uptick has been from those interest rates. The numbers have been good overall on a revenue basis, but it's been in different spots. It's been more of loan growth and consumer side of things versus the trading desks or the trading volumes.
Yeah, and I wanted to go into that a little bit more in detail. Using J.P. Morgan as the example, they said that their banking services to consumers and business revenue was up 15% higher than a year earlier. What kinds of things are we talking about in those two categories?
Right. So everything from the credit card, residential lending, consumer lending, fee-based services of just your basic checking accounts, et cetera, than everything that you and I use on a daily basis.
Head of J.P. Morgan Chase, very bright, optimistic about economic growth, says that the economy could keep growing for years moving forward. This is a comment from Jamie Dimon. There's no law that says it has to stop.
Right. Right. I saw that. His comments are probably the strongest coming out of the big banks that have reported so far. I guess the way I took that is, hey, the economy is the economy that it's running. And while, you look at GDP, for example, is I think something that's quoted, even though it might have dropped a little bit, it's still pretty strong. And the inflation numbers are still strong. So it's just that we've gotten, spoiled with some upticks. And even if there is any kind of a move downward, the U.S. economy is just the best economy to be in, of the whole globe, and still is, and in my opinion, always will be. So that's how I interpret some of the comments, is it doesn't have to move. And if it does, you might have a blip. But it's almost like you can talk yourself into a recession, I guess. And,
right.
There's been different comments from economists that say, look, it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy if you continue to say it's going to happen, it has to happen.
When we talk about J.P. Morgan Chase, that's sort of the national portrait of how things are going. When we look at Associated Bank, you kind of have that level down to the Midwest. Are you guys seeing the same sorts of things in your earnings and revenue? And are there any things different that you might pull out of a report for the Midwest?
Yeah, we haven't released ours yet. It's coming up here. So I can't speak in detail on that. But in just running the commercial book and what I see of corporate and general activity from our clients, we're seeing a mix. You're seeing some strength, some weakness. It depends on who's tied to what. Are you tied to the tariffs that have been hit? And if so, are you able to pass it on? I think I've made the comment before, the closer you are to the end consumer in that on your sales, the harder it is to pass it on. So those type of companies might get hit a little bit harder. Some of the other ones are still doing well. Some of the large corps, we see doing well that are clients, bracing for good liquidity so that they, if there was a downturn, that they could manage it.
Mm-hmm. On one of the other kind of gauges of how things are going locally is, the plans that companies are making. Are you seeing anything in those areas when you talk to clients?
The plans?
Yeah, maybe the next year?
Yeah. Most are stabilized plans. And what the biggest issue, and a recurring point, is people. So two things, people and technology. So are you keeping up on the technology side of things no matter what your business is? And can you manage the spend? Do you have enough volume to manage the spend to keep up with it? And then getting and keeping good people. That's by far the number one issue, or what keeps our CFOs and CEOs up at night, especially in the manufacturing distribution side of things, a little bit less in the technology and the service sector.
I want to switch to something that the International Monetary Fund's leader was talking about, Christine Lagarde, about cryptocurrencies shaking the banking systems around the world as sort of a disrupting force. I don't know if you saw her comments and what we should take from them.
I did, and something that we've discussed on this show a lot before that is coming, and I think that her comments say you have to be ready for it, you have to be prepared for it, and you can't put your head in the sand. Again, a comment we've said before. But what her comments state is, our discussion points, there needs to be regulation around it. So shaking the banking system and any kind of forcing in of the cryptocurrency is something that they're going to monitor and will need to be regulated, because you have to build the trust in the system, and you have to build, you know, that same word we used before, checks and balances in the system to make sure that it's a regulated piece.
Are you seeing any regulations in those areas on the horizons? I know we've seen a lot of deregulation in the banking industry over the last few years. I've not heard of any in this area, though.
Well, I haven't heard of anything specific, but I think you still have the disruptors, as they call it, mm-hmm. are coming in. I've got to believe, Steve, that they're building it. You know, people that in the government are looking at it, building it. You see some regulation in that. Again, we'll bring up JP Morgan. We talked about before they came up with the JPM coin, and that in of itself, because they are a bank, is automatically going to be regulated. So I think that's one to watch. You have Facebook talking about coming out with its own cryptocurrency developing. That will be really interesting to watch. You've got to believe that will be regulated. I can't believe that with the scale there that wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. And we already talked about before, you know, Apple, while it's not a cryptocurrency, their credit card, I think, almost kind of would act like it a little bit. So I think that the bigs, if they lead, you'll build the regulation around it. The banks, JP Morgan, and I know there was another bank on the East Coast that had already come out with its own cryptocurrency. Same thing. You know, those will probably pave the way for it. And then the IMF and the government are going to regulate the disruptors.
Yeah, and it feels like we're on the verge of seeing a whole new era of financial payments and banking moving into the future.
You are, and if one hot topic for CFOs, and especially in some of the larger space, is real-time payments, mm-hmm. You know, which that can help accommodate. It's something that is probably the fastest moving piece, and I know all banks that are associated and regionals and above are certainly putting a lot of people on it. You know, believe me, there are different, whatever you call it, projects or different thought teams that are putting that together, because if you sit back, you're going to get left behind.
I'm also fascinated by what's happening with cashless businesses. We've seen over the last couple of weeks some pushback to some of the businesses. Amazon Go, one of them, that is a place that doesn't normally take cash. And people who use cash have been successful in changing their business model a little to take cash.
They have. And it's such a flip from, you know, I mean, it seems like it wasn't that long ago that everybody wanted cash, and, you know, how quickly things change. So, you know, no, I've definitely not read of anything that is a negative. Mm-hmm. I think it depends on where you are in your, you know, how old you are, what your age bracket is, on how well you accommodate that. But it's the wave of the future.
Rod, good chatting with you as always. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one conversation?
Sure thing. Thanks, Steve. So they can contact me by calling at 312-544-4515 or an email of rodney.murray@associatedbank.com.
Okay, we'll see you next time.
All right, thanks, Steve.
Rod Murray is the Chicago Market President at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. Remember, you can listen to past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page. Also follow Associated Bank on Twitter at Associated Biz, and you head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership to learn more about our thought leaders and hear more conversations there as well.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of the opening bell. Nearly 2 out of 3 workers over the age of 45 have seen or experienced age discrimination on the job. That's according to the results of a wide-ranging AARP survey done in 2018. Among the 61% of respondents who reported age bias, 91% believe that sort of discrimination is common. But it doesn't have to be a bad thing, and it doesn't have to be the end of the road, as our next guest will tell us. Larry Chester is founder and president of CFO Simplified. He couldn't get hired at age 61, so he started his own business. Now he's out talking about the experience and ageism in the workforce. Larry, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Let's begin by talking about ageism so that everybody knows what we're going to be talking about. I know your story involves your age in the 60s, but as I mentioned, this starts happening to people at age 45. Talk to us a little bit about ageism.
Well, I think the issue is that there's this strong thrust in businesses towards hiring young and what they might consider young and vibrant and exciting people. And I think they miss the fact that people over the age of 50 or even 60 are still young and vibrant and full of experience and energy. I know that I'm up and out every day and doing all the things that I did when I was younger. So I don't understand. I guess I don't understand what businesses don't see.
Yeah. So tell us about your experience before you started your company, CFO Simplified. What was it like for you?
Well, you know, you hear about opportunities and you send your resume and you talk to people and do interviews. I think the most interesting thing was that somebody did ask me once, would I be willing to make a 15-year commitment to the company? And I was 58 years old at the time, so that would have taken me to the age 73. And I just thought it was a little obvious to me that they were trying to cut out people who were over a certain age, because I don't think they felt that anybody over the age of 65, you know, during that 15-year period would have been willing to do that. So I told them I certainly would, but they, you know, but they still didn't offer me the job.
And so what happened then? Was it just a series of small time spent at some of the companies that you were hired at, just short-term hiring?
Yes, what I found was that people weren't willing to hire me for full-time work for a long-term position, but because of my experience, they were willing to hire me to do short-term engagements, whether that be before they were able to find a full-time CFO, or if they were in a position where they had some particular project, they were buying a company or something like that, that required somebody to come in and work for a period of 3 months or 6 months to help them with a particular situation. After I had done that for a period of almost a year and a half, I decided, you know, what I'm really doing is working as a consultant for these companies. It's interesting that people feel that somebody with white hair is the ideal consultant, but not necessarily the ideal employee. So I decided to start my own consulting firm, which is exactly what I did.
So that must have been your aha moment, and that's how you started CFO Simplified. How things changed for you since you started your own company?
Well, it's been wonderful because I found that there are a lot of companies that aren't in a position to be able to pay the money to hire a full-time CFO, but having somebody 1 or 2 days a week or even 1 day a month is well within the financial capabilities of the company, and yet they get the same kind of senior financial advice from us being there 1 or 2 days a week that a large company gets from a full-time CFO who's there 5 days a week, but obviously it's less expensive. And now I'm at a point where I've got 5 full-time people working for me, going out to businesses throughout the Chicago area, even into Wisconsin and into Michigan.
And the demographics of that group, they all sort of look like you, don't they?
Well, most of them do. I have 2 people working for me who are younger. I mean, one's in his early 60s, and I have somebody working for me who's in their mid-40s. But everybody, you know, we're all senior people. I have several people in their late 60s, and it's great to have them part of my organization because they're sharp, they've got deep experience, and they're able to really apply what they've learned at any business that they work at.
Larry, you touched on it a little earlier, but I want to dive into it a little bit further. What do you think is going on in companies when they're making these decisions and avoiding hiring older workers? Is it that they some sort of a bias that they don't even think that is happening, or what do you think is happening here?
Well, I think there's a stereotype that as people get older, they slow down, they're not as sharp mentally, they're not interested in working hard, they're they're just not able to perform. And I think that's a fallacy. I think there are a lot of people that are interested in working well into their 70s. I'm a perfect example. And they're certainly able to apply the experience they've got. They're not interested in slowing down. I have 8 grandchildren. I spend a certain amount of time running around and chasing and wrestling around with them. And that's certainly not something that that is certainly something that's indicative of the enthusiasm and excitement that I bring to any job that I do.
And there are some really good qualities, too, in older workers. I know that you've talked about this in other interviews, but the emotional maturity is one of those the big deals. And you mentioned it earlier, the experience that an older worker brings, something that is invaluable in the workplace.
Sure, and I think the emotional maturity is a big factor for us in that we're able to kind of take a look at things from a calm, mature perspective and not get really overexcited at things that may go wrong. You know, we kind of marvel at people who are making mistakes for them for the first time that we made a long, long time ago. So we would avoid those certainly in giving advice to people. And I think the opportunity to be able to use the experience of somebody who is older and has worked in multiple companies and had 20, 30, 40 years even of experience in business, I think is really a benefit to a younger business owner. And I found that a lot of the business owners that we have who ask for our help are truly in their 30s or early 40s. So they're taking advantage of the long work experience that we have.
Yeah, and not only to the younger employers, the business owners, but, you know, we talk a lot about the millennials in the workforce as the growing biggest part of the workforce these days. It feels like those younger people are not getting to take advantage of working alongside somebody with the experience like you.
Well, I think there's something very good about mentoring, and I think a lot of the millennials feel that they need to build those experiences and learn those things all by themselves rather than taking advantage of the experience that that older workers have had and the guidance that they can get in those areas. It's kind of interesting. I remember when my children were growing up having them tell me that they wanted to make their own mistakes. And I've told them, you know, it's great that you want to make your own mistakes, but make some new ones. You know, I've already made these mistakes, you know, learn from my experience.
Yeah, and it feels like, too, that if you're running a company, you have, you know, look at that bottom line every day. You don't want big mistakes to happen on the clock, and it feels like an older workforce, a mixed workforce, would help you get there.
Well, I think your comment about a mixed workforce, I think, is very relevant because certainly there are new creative ideas that young people have, but I think older people with a blend of the creativity that they bring and the experience that they have in businesses and just in life, I think provides a wonderful mix in a workplace. We find that we sit in on management meetings for our clients, and that blend of experience with the creativity and the enthusiasm that some of these younger people have is a wonderful mix for any business. And as they're trying to work their way through the challenges and problems that businesses have in today's economy.
You know, I'm betting there are people in their 50s and 60s listening to our conversation this morning thinking, you know, not everybody can start their own business and be a consultant. Something more needs to happen here to stop ageism or at least try to prevent it a little bit. Do you have any ideas about what solutions there might be?
Well, I don't really know. I think the issue is that if you walk into a job interview or present yourself in situations and show that enthusiasm, that excitement, if you sit forward in your chair, if you are animated in your conversation, if you don't take a long time between the question that's asked and the answers that you give, I think that shows that you're sharp and at the top of your game. And I think that's what business owners are looking for when they're hiring somebody.
Yeah, and the other part of this, too, is not everybody, if retirement is the only option, other option, not everybody is financially stable enough to retire when they're supposed to or when the society thinks they're supposed to in their early 60s. That's the other part of what is driving all of this, isn't it?
Well, I think there are two things. I think one certainly is the financial aspect of it, but the other thing is that, you know, life doesn't end when you're 60 years old. There are things that we as older workers want to do to keep our lives and our minds sharp and going. You know, being involved in an active work environment certainly keeps you much more of an active person mentally and physically and able to just continue to be a productive member of society. And I think that's what we're all looking for.
What has it been like starting your business, starting this business from scratch and getting it going, being an entrepreneur at, in your 60s?
Well, I think it's been really exciting. I think the interesting thing is that you always need to be aware of how your business is operating and what things need to be done to make it better. I think that any business owner that doesn't look at how to change his business to make it more relevant to the climate that he's working in is missing out on opportunities or putting his business at risk. Certainly the things that I'm doing now are different than I did 10 years ago when I started. When I started 10 years ago, I was working by myself trying to find longer engagements. Now I've got five people working for me. We also do QuickBooks bookkeeping, file setup. We do executive search with a lifetime guarantee for any placement. I mean, those are things that I didn't even think about when I started my business 10 years ago. And yet they're a significant portion of the work that we do now.
So, Larry, as we close out here, give our audience a little bit of advice. If they are in a situation where they feel like, whether it be in a job interview or somewhere else, where they feel like ageism is creeping in, what should their first reaction be and how should they deal with that?
Well, I think the first thing is to make it clear to the person you're talking to that you have no plans on slowing down, that what you're looking for is an opportunity to contribute to the business, and that your years and years of experience in different environments allow you to contribute significantly. And being able to take that experience right then and there and give them examples of how you would use that experience to help them with problems that they're facing today, I think is an indication of your ability to be able to integrate and be productive in their company as, you know, after you're hired.
Well, your story is certainly an inspiration to people who are fighting this, and we appreciate you sharing some of it with us this morning and being on with us, and we wish you continued success.
Well, thanks very much, Steve. It's been great talking to you.
Larry Chester this morning, CFO Simplified is his company in Wheeling, and you can find out more online at CFOSimplified.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. Dow futures down 41 points, nearly a quarter percent. S&P and NASDAQ futures are a little bit lower this morning as well. Couple of stories as we wrap up the program this morning from Wisconsin. Follow-up to our Foxconn discussion yesterday, Governor Tony Evers says he wants to renegotiate Wisconsin's nearly $3 billion contract with Foxconn, saying it is unrealistic to think the company will employ 13,000 people as originally promised. Evers telling reporters yesterday that the state is working with the Taiwan-based Foxconn to look at revising the original contract for the proposed facility to build liquid crystal display panels because it deals with a situation that no longer exists. Remember that President Trump touted the Foxconn project in Wisconsin as a sign of the return of manufacturing to the United States. It would be Foxconn's first manufacturing facility outside of Asia, but skeptics have questioned the project that was announced more than a year ago. Under terms of the original deal struck by Evers' predecessor, Governor Scott Walker, Foxconn could get more than $4 billion in state and local tax credit if it employs 13,000 people and invests $10 billion in the state. Also this morning, Polo Ralph Lauren has launched a version of its iconic polo shirt crafted entirely out of recycled plastic bottles. The company's chief innovation officer says the new Earth Polo is dyed in a process that uses zero water. Each shirt made from an average of 12 bottles collected in Taiwan, where polos are made in partnership with an organization called First Mile. The shirts will be available starting today for men and women at RalphLauren.com. and in stores around the globe. Now, the WGN Associated Bank outlook for today. Retail sales for March and the weekly jobless report will lead things off. Retail analysts see sales bouncing back after February's 0.2% decline. The experts are forecasting a 0.9% gain last month. Retail sales numbers again and the weekly jobless numbers due out mid-morning. Also today, the jobless numbers, first-time claim for unemployment benefits. Smart Money expects to see 205,000 workers filing initial claims, up from 196,000 in last week's report. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, April the 18th.